at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
All right. Hour two of the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back. Welcome into the 97.1 FM listeners. Also, we've got two crowds for us here, so maybe twice the calls. Boy, that we had a lot of great calls and questions in the first hour. Got through a lot with everybody, and actually had John call in, who had a lot of water experience, kind of helped me clear up the ball valve I was trying to describe for the actual newer main water shutoff is the best kind of valve to put on that main water line, and that will keep the flow good and not restricted. And so that's what we were looking for, to kind of help Mark out with what type of valve to put on there. So I appreciate that call and question in. And we had a whole long list here. And guess what? We've got a whole nother hour for you coming up right now, starting right now. So go ahead and just get in. We'd love to help you out. 314-436-7900 is where you're going to find me. And kind of going back, I want to go back over, just clear up a couple things to where, because there was a lot of information, a lot of calls, a lot of stuff going through. So for Al with his pilot light, it depends a lot on the age of that water heater. If you need an actual lighter, an actual open flame to get that lit. So a lot of newer models have the self-light pilot light, where you can hold the button in and it has the electronic igniter or a hot surface igniter that'll get that pilot light going and make everything work. And some older models, when you turn that over to pilot and you hold that down, you actually are going to need to use a lighter, an open flame, to get that flame started. So it's all in the age, and you just got to kind of look at the age and the model. I would say the easiest thing to do is Google the model number of your water heater, and it'll let you know if you're going to need to put an open flame to that or not. And also, the next one was kind of water lines in the ground in the St. Louis area. We were talking about the water leak, and with John about the depth, and with Mark about finding the leak in the yard and everything. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understood well that the building code in St. Louis, St. Louis City, St. Louis County, all around St. Louis, basically officially has our frost line at 30 inches for all building materials, as far as footings and holding up the house and piers for a deck and any type of way that you build there. The St. Louis City and St. Louis County current code basically states that a residential plumbing code states that the water line should be approximately 12 inches below that frost line. So it should be 42 inches deep is where you're going to find typically in the St. Louis area, where that should be. I use should very lightly, not always exactly the case. So dig with caution, call dig right, have your lines marked, do all those great things to avoid issues and complications. But yes, that's kind of the official residential code. And of course, we've talked a lot on the show over the years about codes and residential codes and the codes getting updated. The International Residential Code Book, I believe that gets updated and the codes get updated every 3 years. So when a few weeks back when we were talking about when did they put into it to take bath fans, vent pipes and kitchen vent pipes and anything venting into the attic, it came into the code at some point that now they want that to go outside like it should. It's a great thing to do. Get it all the way to the exterior, have it blow outside so it's not causing any issues in your attic. Well, we were talking about work that had been performed in, I think it was 2010. So basically the codes would have changed 5 times to be every 3 years from the work performed then to the work performed now. So a lot of interesting different electrical and plumbing codes being changed and added. One of the things that we're all kind of wondering when it's going to come into place, because we were talking just a little bit ago about the floor joists and the fire rating, and there's a lot of fire codes now that are pretty strict, and it's for good reason. And when we perform projects, bathroom remodels and kitchen remodels, I was on Thursday, that's the last time I had a conversation with one of my clients about it, with a bathroom remodel on Thursday, I was saying, well, it's kind of up in the air because we're doing some remodeling and really all we're doing electrical wise is changing some fixtures, and we're going to add one outlet behind the toilet so that they can have power for a bidet seat. And so I'm like kind of borderline, like we're not doing a whole lot of electrical, but I will warn you, when we remodel bathrooms, they often stamp the plans and say, make sure the smoke detectors in the home are up to code. And so if they're not, and we looked around their house and they're not, and I'm like, you can get an electrician to do this for you at any given time, even before we show up, it's fine. It just has to be up to code. They all have to be interconnected. But those floor joists, I mean, think about those floor joists. If those burn quicker and your fire's in your basement and you're on the second floor and you don't have smoke detectors that are all over the house and they all go off in the event that one does, and your warning isn't quick enough, boy, that could be tragic. And that's the reason for these different code upgrades and changes and why they get so strict on the smoke detectors, because it's a truly safety thing of being able to get out of your house in the event of a fire. That's just a huge, huge thing. And I would highly recommend to everyone out there, if you aren't sure, if you don't know, or if you know, maybe you just have battery smoke detectors here and there all around, get with some electricians and talk to them about how do you make this up to code. Or it can be somewhat of a DIY project, because they do make these systems where they talk from a radio frequency. So they've got a good like lithium, like 8-10 year battery in them. And they talk from one another with a radio frequency. So there are ways that you could DIY this too, just to be safe, because it's good. It's a good thing. And a lot of people could get upset, kind of going, well, why are they making us do this? And now it's costing more money, and a bathroom remodel costs enough, and now I need an electrician to put in all these smoke detectors. But it's truly for your own safety and your own good. So just consider that, check into it, get as many as you can, make sure they talk to each other. Where you're putting them is basically, there's one in every bedroom of the home inside the bedroom door. There's one outside of every bedroom door within so many feet. I want to say it's like 8 or 10 feet of that door. There needs to be one in the hall. So if you have a 30-foot long hallway with multiple bedrooms, you might need a couple of them there. You need one on each level. You need one in the basement. if there's finished area, you need it in the finished area and one in the unfinished area. And then on each level, it's good to have a carbon monoxide detector. So one of those smoke detectors is required to also be a carbon monoxide detector as well. So you'll have that protection on each floor. And so that kind of reminds me about a story with carbon monoxide detectors and a vehicle, kind of a personal story at my house. So I will get to that. We're going to take a short break. I will also get to your topics, your thoughts, your calls, your questions, whatever you have going on. Don't forget, that's the topic for today. 314-436-7900. I'd love to hear from you. So I'll tell my story and we'll take some more calls with the Home Improvement Show when we return. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show. Rich Orris here. Help you out today. Anything you got, anything you need, what is going on at your home? What are you working on? Do you have a DIY list? Are you like me? Do you have three doors leaning up against the wall in your garage and you're just trying to find the time to actually get them installed? Are you waiting for the fourth door to come in? Are you wondering maybe some tips or tricks on what to do and how to get them in there really well, really good? How should you insulate them? We can go over any kind of remodeling maintenance item that you need around your house. I'm here to help you out today, 314-436-7900. And we were just kind of going over some of the codes, the smoke detector and carbon monoxide codes. And I was talking about bringing up a story, but just want to remind everybody. So the code is you're going to need a carbon monoxide detector in one of those smoke detectors in each level of your home. But for me, I had something happen that kind of brought it to my attention, and it kind of really makes you think, well, it's probably not a bad idea to have maybe a few more of these, because I have a hybrid vehicle from Mosby Building Arts. That's my company car that I drive around. It's half electric, half gas, and it's super quiet. Half the time, you don't even know if it's on or running or not or what's happening. It's just kind of there. And my wife always kind of makes fun of me, because when I get home from work, a lot of times it takes me good 15, 20 minutes to get in the house because I'm on the phone and I'm talking to someone, I'm answering questions, or we're having a conversation. So I kind of sit in the car and finish that conversation for 5 or 10 minutes. And well, one morning I'm getting up and I'm getting ready to leave and I can't find my keys. And I'm like, man, what did I do with my keys? And finally I go out and I look in the car and the car is on. I never took them out. The thing is dead silent. You wouldn't even know it's on. But what will happen is as the hybrid battery goes low, that engine will kick on and it will run, maybe only for a couple, 2 or 3 minutes, and it might shut off and it might not kick back on for 15, 20, 30 minutes, but it did that all night long. I know it did. It probably kicked on every 30 minutes all night long for a couple of minutes. And I thought, oh my gosh. So now inside that hall, right in front of that garage door, about 3 feet away in my house, where you walk in, is a wall outlet plug-in carbon monoxide detector. So think about those areas and what to do, because it just made me think, like, holy cow. Lucky no bedrooms are anywhere near that area, and I doubt it got that bad, but I don't want to find that out the hard way. That's absolutely for sure. So consider all of that when you're looking at where you should put these and thinking about those systems. So, hey, we got Mike on the line here. Mike, are you there? What's going
on? I'm here. I am here, Rich. Got a question. About sure. 18, 20 years ago, had a ceramic tiles put down, kitchen, bathroom, hallway. Really nice job. The guy put down the cement board down, screwed it down. Over the years now, I've noticed maybe two or three of them, when you step on some of the tiles, which are probably in the most heavily trafficked area, you can feel a little give in the tile, and you can see the grout maybe is cracked.
Uh-huh.
What can I do to, do you replace the whole tile? I do have spare tiles kept. I do have the grout kept. you know, powdered grout.
Okay.
I was just wondering, is it something that the grout is loose, or obviously I wish it would have been later because I would have had the Schluter floor put down instead of the cement board. But, but anyway, just curious, you know, it's obviously from movement and everything like that, but is it something you got to take the whole tile out, or do you can you just take the grout out and try replacing the grout?
I mean, so one thing you want to do is you can take the grout out around it, scrape it out, grind it out, and get the grout out from around it. The one thing that's good to do is tap on that tile and see if it sounds solid, because it'll have kind of that hollow sound. So, because even though everything's done really well and really properly with the backer and all that, there could just be an area where that tile didn't sit down into the mortar, or they didn't cover enough of the back of the tile with the mortar touching the mortar. So if you tap on it and it sounds kind of hollow, then I would take that entire tile out and grind down, kind of scrape down the mortar and re-mortar and do what we call like a back butter, where you're putting that some of that mortar on the back of the tile also, and then you set that tile down in there, and you just the rules are you want more than 70% of the tile to be touching mortar. 100% is just that much better.
Well, I was just tapping. I don't know if you could hear it, but I could tell it sounds a little bit hollow.
So. Yeah. And more than likely when that's happening, it is hollow and the tile's kind of shifting and moving. Now, while that tile's out, just make sure that the whole floor isn't moving. I doubt it is. If you've got a 3/4 subfloor and he used that half-inch Durarock, you've got a really sturdy, thick system. That shouldn't be a problem, but it's not a bad idea to step on that area while it's dry and all the mortar's out and just make sure it doesn't feel like there's any give or anything moving underneath there. You might end up needing to put some more of those screws through the actual cement board into the plywood underneath.
Okay, now, if you take the tile out, that sounds easy, but I'm sure it's not that easy.
You're right, yeah.
How do you do that?
I mean, basically, you just want to make sure that you're not prying on any of the other tiles around it to try and get it out. So I just take like a nail set or a thin like a chisel or something sharp or a masonry kind of chisel and just in the center of that tile kind of tap it. And what you're trying to do is get that tile to like break and start coming loose, because what you don't want to do is go to the edge where the grout is and like pry against the tile next to it and break that one too.
Okay. All right. Well, it's just right now it's just a feel type thing. You can feel it moving, and the wife hasn't noticed it yet, but once she will, then, you know, obviously something has to be done. But I can see a little crack along the grout. So, okay, I'll look at it. Thank you for your help.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, no problem at all. So what I heard was it's on your DIY list and you noticed it, but it'll jump up all the way to the front to the honeydew list once your wife notices and says, you know what, the honeydew list is a lot higher concern for most of us than our list. And even in this industry, I'm the same way. I was just talking with a client on Wednesday afternoon about he kept saying he was a procrastinator and he wished he had done more over the years and had some health concerns and wished he could have done more and said, I'm definitely a procrastinator. And I said, well, let me tell you something. I've been talking about these doors I'm changing at my house, and I've been thinking about changing these doors for 5 years. And this is what I do for a living. So sort of like the shoemaker's kids with no shoes, I guess, but also just the procrastination too of I'll get to that. I'll think of that. Don't have time right now. And next thing you know, you kind of look at it and you're like, it's been 5 years. Maybe I should go ahead and wrap that project up. So we're all that way. We're all human. we all do what we can. So, you know what? Let's take a break right now and let's see what kind of calls and questions and concerns and topics we can have come up when we return. Again, 314-436-7900. We'll be right back after this. All right, St. Louis, what is going on at your home? What do you need help with? You have projects, you're installing some doors like I'm getting ready to. I've been talking about my project here and trying to get the doors and order the doors and all the havocs of trying to do this. And this is why we do what we do, what I do on a daily basis with Mosby Building Arts and how Scott Mosby has built the company that I work for around how do we differ ourselves? How do we better ourselves? How do we take what we find out about the industry and perform it differently and set good expectations and just do what we need to do to really deliver a different level of experience when you have a project done. And I'd been kind of going over my door project and trying to order doors and trying to get the doors and typical things that happen when you're trying to perform that and you don't have somebody to kind of take care of everything for you. So if you've had some if you have a story, if you have some industry topic about trying to get work done, trying to get through something, or you had some work done and you just have a story about the typical what happens in the remodeling industry. We'd love to hear from you on something like that too. If you have a question about your house, we can help you out with remodeling, maintenance, anything that you need. I'm right here for you. We got a couple segments left. 314-436-7900 finds me right now. Phone lines are wide open. But and basically what I was kind of alluding to around that is just I told the story a couple, 2-3 weeks ago about my doors coming in damaged that I had ordered from Home Depot and we reordered. And then now last week I had a major delivery kind of snafu, and also the fourth door that is on the order showed up and it was damaged. And so now that door's reordered. So I've gotten three of my doors delivered, not the delivery that I wanted or expected, but it's kind of into that, you know, kind of inspect what you expect out of stuff, like really look into what kind of expectations should you have when performing something like that. Because if I went through Mosby Building Arts and I ordered a door that cost more from Provia that came pre-finished and a better quality, a better warranty, it's going to last longer if I went through that. But I made a decision for our family that we were like, okay, well, we've got not super great doors and they lasted about 15 years and it's been 20 now. So they've kind of lasted 20, but really should have only lasted. I should have done them like 5 years ago, but you know, so I went into doors that I'll just get these doors and I'll paint them myself and they won't come with the locks and everything already on them. And it's not going to have as much of a warranty, but you know, I might be moving in 2 to 5 years or something. Anyways, we'll be making some life decisions. So that's what we do in this industry and try and figure out. But you know, the moral of the story is when you go to someone like that and their delivery system is an outside company that they can't communicate to real well, there might be snafus. It's just a part of the industry. Just live with it. And understand it and know what to expect. And then it won't bother you as much when things happen and you kind of know or you plan for it. And if it does go good, because not all stories are bad, but you know, if it does go good, it's kind of like winning the lottery. So I'm here. I'm getting through it. I've got three of my doors. I got one more. They're trying to rush the order. They're crediting back the delivery fees that I paid and some items like that because of all the troubles. That's wonderful, too. I love them. They do call me. That's a good thing. They call. They ask questions. They talk about it. They explain it, which is great. Helps me understand. And it just shows me that they do care. It's just they're in this system and they're trying to work with it and get things as good as possible. One of the goofy things was, I don't know if anybody's out there ever ordered something like this to be delivered from a big box store, but basically my delivery, I can even look up the email. They give you a window that they'll deliver your items in. And so we picked a day. We said, you know, let's do it Tuesday. My wife will be around. They're like, all right. So they send the email. The window delivery is 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's a 14-hour window. Like, okay, well, I'm saving a bunch of money. So, okay, that's what happens, and that's what you just need to expect. And but I'm kind of thinking and looking about it like, man, if I told one of my clients, you know, we'll be there. You know, I'm going to come by and I'll be happy to look at that bathroom for you. We can talk about how we can help you remodel it, help you design it. We could talk about our licensed architect on staff, all that. I'll be to you somewhere between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. is like totally ridiculous. But, you know, it is what it is. You get what you pay for. If I would have bought into a different system, I'd have probably not had as many issues and got things a little quicker, but I would have probably paid 2 to 3 times the amount. So this is what we do, and this is what I like to help kind of make these decisions with everybody and say, yeah, this is why we do what we do, and that's okay if you're looking for something better, if you're tired of all of that. Everything you've come to know and learn and expect from the industry, and you're looking for something different and better, it exists. People do it. We may not even be the only one. I would personally feel we're probably the best at it, but it's still, we're doing everything we can to taking that list of what are the complaints. What are people saying at the end of their projects? And basically that whole list is like, yeah, the delivery didn't come right. Nothing like that worked out. They didn't do what they said. I didn't get what I expected. When the project was done, I was surprised about this or didn't know about that. And yeah, we're just out here trying to set enough good expectations to really know and understand and get you in the knowing and the understanding of everything that's going to happen also. So when you go through that and you see a scope of work and one person that's claiming to build the same thing's got about 8 or 10 or 12 lines and it's very, very vague, and I'm sitting in front of you with 3 pages of scope that call out everything we have, everything we're using, what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, when are we going to do it? There's so much into all of that. So just trying to make the world a better place, one job at a time. But hey, we're going to jump into our break here. We got one segment left for you. So don't touch that dial. Again, you can reach me at 314-436-7900. All right, here we are. Here we go. Last segment of the Home Improvement Show. Rich Orris here to help you out. We've got a couple calls chiming in. So let's go straight to Sally and see what is going on. How can we help, Sally?
Hello. We have a home that has a split foyer, and we have taken the carpet off of the steps and are having the steps refinished. And so on the edge of the step where it meets the wall going up and down the steps, there is a gap between the step and the wall, and I was wondering, should we try to put some kind of filler in there or do some kind of trim? What do we need to do to finish that off so that it looks good?
So are you talking kind of on the actual tread itself? There's a gap between
yes.
the side of the tread, like what you're stepping on, and is it also at the rise where it's kind of going up the back of the step? Is there a gap there to the riser to the wall as well?
There's not as much on the riser as there is on the tread.
Okay. So the tread can be a little more difficult. About how wide do you guess this gap is?
About a quarter of an inch.
Okay. So if the stair tread has pretty square edges, I would recommend doing some sort of small piece of trim, like a little half inch by half inch cove mold or some little kind of piece, a little either a quarter round or a cove mold to kind of cover that up. Because if you try and fill it or caulk it, quarter inch is pretty wide, and you will probably, with movement and the drywall moves a little, if the wood of the stair expands or contracts, moves a little, you'll end up seeing cracks and things going on there. So, but the hard part is if your stair tread has a very rounded nose, that's
and
a little
does.
Yeah, that's going to be way more difficult to kind of trim around to make it look really good. So you're in a little bit of a tough spot where
right.
if you try and fill it, I would suggest if you can use something like a really flexible caulk that might move with there. Are you staining the steps? Like a
we
wood
are.
Color?
So I didn't know yeah. if we should put a wood filler in that and before it's stained or what?
Yeah, so a wood filler in there is going to be, I mean, it would work, and they could do that, and they can make it look pretty good, but a wood filler is hard, and it's not very pliable. It's not going to stay soft. So what you're looking for is something that sticks and stays soft so that if things move, it doesn't just crack. And
oh,
so
okay.
a wood filler, they can probably make that look perfect, and within a day to 10 years you'll see cracks on each side between the wood and the filler. It will just
okay.
more than likely do that. So if there's a way they could do some sort of trim or something, or the last option is to actually just replace the tread itself and cut and install a little bit longer tread that comes tighter to the wall.
Okay.
Yep.
And let me ask you also, as far as like newel posts, because we're putting those in also, do you usually buy those pre-made? And if so, where? Or do people just create those themselves?
Oh, like the fancy style, kind of nice looking newel post with the shapes where it's...
Yes,
you're
a
talking
square.
About, oh,
like
yeah, yeah.
Square
you can,
post with mm-hmm. all the trim.
Yeah, you can purchase those at any of the box stores. They'll have railings and handrails and newel post and spindles and everything, so you can buy it at any of the big box stores, Lowe's, Home Depot, all that, or you can go to a stair company like Kirkwood Stair, or there's different stairing companies that you can purchase the materials from them. And they can get their hands on different types of materials too. So, because sometimes to make these rails work, you might need a newel post at the top of the stairs that is 42 inches tall, and you might need one at the bottom of the stairs that's 52 inches tall to make the handrail work out from where it sits on the stair, especially if you got a split level and like a landing. And they can get more, they can look at all that stuff and get more parts and different parts and better parts that'll work for you. The big box stores are going to order certain things and just kind of have it there. And there might be more available that they don't tell you about that a stair company would know about?
Okay, so Kirkwood Stair?
Yep. Yep.
They
do installs too. They do the installs and everything too if you needed that for like the rail and stuff. So, yep, I would check them out.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, you're very welcome. Let's go to Mary real quick and see if we can get help Mary out. Are you there?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I've called before.
Okay.
I have a lot of damage from the storms, and I have an adjuster coming out on Monday. And on my windows, there's like where the glass is put into that vinyl.
Uh-huh.
There's lots and lots of holes from the hail damage.
Yeah, in the vinyl part.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it's where the glass is fitting into it.
Yep.
You know, the frame.
It's called the sash. Like there's a frame around the glass, and that's inside the window frame itself. That's called the sash, where the glass and the little bit of frame around the glass. Yep.
Oh, okay. So do I get that replaced, or do I need to get a new window? And my door is the same way, my sliding glass door to my patio. And I also have an Anderson door that opens to the patio, and it has like ripples, and it is pulled,
yeah.
The vinyl's pulled away from the wood.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hanging out, and it's like, are they going to approve? I'm worried about getting approved for windows and a door.
They should approve you for the whole window and the whole door unit itself, unless the windows are like pretty new. I mean, if we installed the windows 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, we knew what they were and we knew what to get, we could order just new sashes. But you're probably not in that situation whatsoever. And, yeah, the insurance company should cover the whole window unit, frame and all, the whole door unit, frame and all, especially the slider and definitely the Anderson. They should cover 100% of all of those. Because that Anderson door, you can do nothing to that metal to glue it back on that wood well enough to keep that door from not getting rotted out and destroyed later on from water getting into it. There's no way to reapply that metal. So it will definitely need to be a whole new door unit. Yep. So they should totally cover that for you.
The first adjuster said, have to replace these things around it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Mary, unfortunately, I'm totally out of time. I've got about 6 seconds here. But hey, call again next week and we can continue this on again. And for everybody else, be good, do good things, be good to each other.